My name's Bill. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Bill.
Can you guys do me a favor? Pass me that sign. I just wanted it to be more prominently displayed. I'm really happy to be in a meeting where there's the four absolutes being shown, in case you didn't know what that is. Mm-hmm. The four absolutes comes from the Oxford group, which is where AA came from, and the four absolutes are in the big book under step 4, under step 10, and under step 11. And the four absolutes are a major part of the beginning of AA and a big part of my life. So I really dig that that's in the room. So I didn't realize there was actually a format. Let me see. Well, I was not listening.
Show of hands, meeting, approving. So you have two.
Let's speak for an hour?
Yeah. No, right. You speak for 45 minutes.
All right. I'll probably speak longer than that.
60 minutes. And then there's questions and answers like the last 15 minutes.
Cool. I don't know if I'm going to follow that format, but... So I want to thank the group for allowing me to be of service. What I hope to do during these next 6 or 7 weeks is facilitate just basically spontaneously talking about the steps and do a little reading from the book. And then what I'm going to do each week is I have handouts each week, and each week it's sort of a spiritual exercise for everybody to work with. It might be step-related, it might not be. So you guys will have homework, is what I'm saying. I'm sorry, assignments. That's what AAs don't like the word homework, so assignments. But, you know, it's just a spiritual practice to work with for a week, and you can do it or not do it. It doesn't matter to me. I'm just offering an opportunity, and if you take advantage of the opportunity, great. If you don't, that's great, too. So tonight I want to talk about step one. Although I want to point out that my recovery didn't start with step one. My recovery started with somebody else's step 12. And for me it's sort of an interesting juxtaposition. It's an interesting twist on the general wisdom in AA, because for me, somebody else's 12-step is how it happened, and somebody else's 12-step is what hit me. And then after coming and going for a relatively short period of time, I then went to my last rehab and was in AA for about 3 years, and then it was somebody's 12-step again that hit me, and that was when I realized that drinking is not my problem. And not drinking is not my solution. And I know that this is a big enough group of people where there's some people sitting here that think that's the deal, and it couldn't be further from the truth. Drinking is not our problem. And not drinking is not our solution. As a matter of fact, part of the big book suggests we drink. So, I mean, obviously, there's a strange, unexpected thing there. But... somebody, the final hammer to the face happened when I had 3.5 years, and somebody big booked me, and I didn't realize what was happening. They caught me off guard, because for the first time I was just completely straightforward and completely honest with the fact that I had 3.5 years, and whatever it was that I was doing was failing real bad. And I was either going to drink or I was going to kill myself. And for the first time since I came that last time for the 3.5 years, I told somebody what was really going on. And I picked the right person, which not all of us do, but I picked the right person. And the reason why I knew that it was the right person was because when I had 2.5 years... he had about 7 years, and he was the poster child for, this guy's a lot worse than I am. I must be doing okay, because look at him. He's really bad. And then his whole life changed, and he got better. And that really, really pissed me off. One, because now I didn't have a poster child anymore, and I would have to kind of look at myself. I didn't have somebody's worse than me to point to. I just had me is worse than me. And also, I witnessed for the first time a transformed person happening right before my eyes. Mm-hmm. And I knew that he was worse than I was, and now I saw him getting better. And, you know, for the 2.5 years I had been AA, that developed into 3.5 years, I heard your stories about how you used to be one way and now you're no longer that way. But I never saw your transformation. Mm-hmm. But in this guy's case, I saw his transformation. I saw that he was worse than me. And then I saw that he was no longer there. He was much better. He was very approachable. He was very calm in his own skin. He was very comfortable within himself. His eyes sparkled. He became one of these kind of spiritual kind of people that there's no sense in lying to them because they can tell you, they know you're lying. You know what I mean? Like, there's no reason to lie to somebody like this because there's no way you're going to get away with it. And I knew that that was the person that I was in front of that day that I took a risk and shared with him that I wasn't doing well. And I probably had never been doing well. And there were certain problems associated with drinking that I no longer had. But the real problems, which was I just don't dig life. I just don't get along with others. I just don't deal with my emotions very well. And nothing seems to go the way I would want it to go. And even when it does go my way, I don't seem to be happy with it. That's the strange thing, is that even when things sort of seemed successful on the outside, on the inside, I was still bad. I was still dying. I was still tortured. I was still angry. I was still pissed off. I was still very afraid. I was still very, very lost. And, you know, I had it all. You know what I mean? I had it all. I had a really great job. I was working for AT&T. You know, I had a wonderful biker chick as a woman. I had her son, who is my son still today. And, you know, I wasn't the father, but he's really my son. I'm closer to him than his parents are. Mm. And I took the risk, and I said, Sam, you know, I shared some stuff with him, and it's really funny because, you know, I was sharing, it wasn't a fifth step, but it was sort of like that, a real brief fifth step. On, you know, kind of current stuff. And, you know, I thought it was a really big mistake, but I realized that he was big booking me. And what happened was I shared some stuff that I was currently doing and that I was currently still involved in, which is very old behavior and very wrong. And, you know, after maybe about a 10-minute conversation of me just dominating the conversation and sharing with him how bad I was doing, at one point he kind of, you know, almost like snickered because of something that I was sharing, which was like really wrong, that I was currently involved in. And then finally my last straw was I shared something and he kind of laughed. And that was when I just like straightened up and I got real serious. And I was like, Sam, you know, I don't see what's so funny. This is really hard for me. I don't appreciate you laughing at me. Mm-hmm. And he goes, that was the moment that he realized that I was really serious, that I wasn't just dumping, that he saw at that point that I was really serious and that it was really bad. And that was when he straightened up and he got really serious. And he was laughing at me because the stuff I was sharing with him was just so pathetic that, you know, it's like a fifth step thing. Like, it's so pathetic that you just got to laugh because it's like, it's stupid. You know what I mean? Like, how could we get ourselves involved in this kind of thing? Mm. And, you know, you just like kind of laugh because it's so pathetic. And that was when he sort of straightened up, and that was when he became real serious. And he said to me, Bill, you know, I know it doesn't look like it, and I know it doesn't feel like it, but you're in a really great place. And I said, Sammy, you're not listening to me. There's nothing I'm sharing with you right now that has anything to do with a really great place. I don't know how you can say that. You're not listening to me. And he said, no, I'm telling you. I'm telling you, you're in a really great place because you only have two options. You can either go on living the way you're living, and I'm telling you right now, it's only going to get worse, or you can consider another way besides your own. And I was like, what? And he goes, you can either go on living the way you're living, and I'm telling you right now, it's only going to get worse, and he was sharing his experience. For him, it just got worse. He had 7 years of this. I only had 3.5. Mm-hmm. And he said, or you can consider another way besides your own. And I said, Sammy, I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. There is no other way besides my own. And then we had like a little bit of a brief conversation, and then that was when he outlined to me the threefold problem, which is alcoholism, and he shared with me the threefold solution for alcoholism that AA has to offer. And both of those really major pieces of information that I'll share with you really, really pissed me off, because when he shared with me the physical, mental, and spiritual disease called alcoholism and the physical, mental, and spiritual solution called recovery in AA, both of those things were incredibly important pieces of information, and both of those things were completely news to me, and I had 3.5 years, so why did you people keep this from me? And I got really, really pissed off. Mm-hmm. And I said to him, why is this news to me? This is life-saving stuff. I have 3.5 years. Why is this news to me? Mm. And I was really pissed at the fellowship for a pretty brief period of time. Mm. At least that time. I've been pissed at the fellowship for other things. And what I found out is there's no reason to be pissed, because most of the people in AA don't know anything about it either.
Right.
Maybe it sounds like a judgment. Maybe it is. That's my experience. I have 26 years now. I can tell you I've had way too many conversations with people that are like, wow, I never knew the steps were in the big book. Why is that news to me? You guys are lucky. You like study the big book. You know what I mean? You guys are lucky, man. There's people dying out there that their sponsors are telling them, don't get into the steps. You want to don't get into the steps too early. Do one step a year. Mm-hmm. And that was what I landed in Piscataway, New Jersey, in the early 90s. And for 3.5 years, that was where I lived and that was where I was. And I hated it. And I don't deny the possibility of somebody was saying something during that period of time, where I was. But I can't say that I heard it. And, you know, if it's the kind of thing where, you know, 10 people share and it's issues and tissues, and one person shares and it's about the solution, you're not going to hear that. You're not going to hear 1 out of 10. You know what I mean? So I assume that that's what was probably going on, but I wasn't hearing anything by way of a solution. There certainly wasn't anybody saying, you know, get into the steps immediately and quickly. There wasn't anybody doing that. I had never heard that before. And, you know, I said, Sam, you know, I know a year ago that you weren't doing well like I am. But I can also see that you're not there anymore and that you're doing really well. So what happened? And I always share this, and I mean no disrespect, but I was afraid that he was going to say that he got put on medication or something. Mm. I'm really happy that that wasn't the message that was carried to me. And he just shared that he was at a meeting and somebody confronted him during the meeting, the late, great Howard G. And Howard is this... There's people in the room that knew Howard. And, you know, Howard is this sort of scrawny kind of Jewish man. And he became my sponsor, and I have an immense amount of love and respect for that man because he changed my life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just like me, he could be an idiot too. And I always needed to throw that in. We're all human. Don't put anybody on a pedestal ever. And Howard walked up to Sam at this meeting, and the meeting had just ended, and, you know, they said the Lord's Prayer, the Serenity Prayer or something, and Sam went in the back to throw something in the garbage or get some coffee or something, and Howard just walked up to him and just kind of cornered him and wouldn't let him move from where he was. And Sam is this big, huge biker guy. Sam, you'd be, you know, when Sam was squirrely like a rat, you would be afraid to sit next to him. Mm-hmm. Sam was the most unapproachable, the most angry-looking guy I've ever known, and This is what Howard walked up to. And Howard looked at Sam and said, you know, are you as miserable as your face looks? Now, Nobody ever talked to Sam like that. Nobody talked to Sam, let alone said something that seemed, whatever, confrontational. You know, mm-hmm. forget about it. And for whatever reason, that night, Sam let that message in. And Sam said to Howard, I'm actually probably doing worse than my face looks. And I'm not finding any answers here. And I hate my life. And Howard took him under his arm and he brought him to his house and he started taking him through the big book. And in a short period of time, just like a few months, Sam went through all 12 steps out of the big book and every area of Sam's life changed for the better. And that was what I saw the year earlier before I had this conversation with Sam, was that one day Sam was a angry, squirrely rat, and now he's happy. And there was another thing that really pissed me off, because I was just like, here's further proof that God doesn't like me. You know what I mean? God helped this guy. This guy was worse than me. And like, you know what I mean? Like, God hates me. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
And, I had 3.5 years. And another thing that sucks about that experience is that, sometimes you watch people with less time than you get well. And there's more evidence that God hates you. You know what I mean? Like, and so, Sam started talking to me about the physical, mental, and spiritual illness called alcoholism. And I really thought that, drinking was my problem, so not drinking was my solution. Why do I need this? This is, I still refer to the 12 steps as intellectually insulting. I could come up with a much better program than that. You know what I mean? Like, like where is the loan step? Because I need a loan. You know what I mean? Like, where is the spokesmodel step? Like, I need a girlfriend. You know what I mean? Like, what does this have anything to do with anything? Right. The steps are intellectually insulting. But the cool thing about the steps is the steps don't care what you think about them. The steps just want you to do them. The big book, this is really important. Please listen to what I'm about to say. The big book is not meant to be understood. It's meant to be experienced, period. It's not meant to be understood. You go to a restaurant, you can really memorize and understand that menu, but there's no food going into your mouth. You're not experiencing the menu, you're understanding the menu, which is nothing. It means nothing. Knowing this book means nothing. Experiencing this book, that's everything. Mm-hmm. That's the only thing this book is about, is to experience it. And the book itself says, to be meant to be done quickly and immediately. Quickly and immediately. Immediately means if you came to AA for the first time and you've stopped throwing up, you're late. If you're new and you don't have a sponsor yet, and you're wondering what to do about getting a sponsor, go around asking people, I want to get into the steps immediately. Will you be willing to work with me in the big book and take me through the steps immediately? If the person says, no, that's not necessary, run away from them. No reason to have a conversation. No reason to have an argument. It's no big deal. You didn't find the person yet. Just find somebody that says yes to that question. Are you willing to take me through the steps out of the big book now? If the person says yes, let's go to the diner, we'll start today. Then your Lord and Savior has just shown up. I can't say that any more strongly. If I, as a sponsor, really care for somebody, why would I keep them from the solution? Mm-hmm. They don't deserve it yet? They have to get well first? They're not going to get well until they do the steps. But Sammy started with explaining to me what the problem was. And I'll do that now. And then show you in the book where it is. There's one paragraph that outlines the problem extensively. In its entirety. Just one paragraph. And there's bits and pieces of it all throughout the beginning part of the book. In regard to the physical, mental, and spiritual. But this one paragraph is the one that I use to point out, and then I can show you other places and all that. So, what he explained to me that night and how I work with people in explaining it is that it's physical, mental, and spiritual, which is really good because our solution is physical, mental, and spiritual. It needs to be because the problem is physical, mental, and spiritual. And physically, you know, there was a part of my drinking that was really baffling to me until I had that conversation with Sam, because I always wondered why when I drink alcohol does it end up going down this way? Like, why does it go down this way? This is kind of baffling to me. I had never heard the explanation before, and as soon as I heard it, I said, you know, that explains many things that I never knew. And for an alcoholic, which is only 13% of the whole entire world, 13% are alcoholics. We're the lucky ones. All right? The reason why we're the lucky ones is because alcoholism is perhaps the only disease that when you take the cure, you're actually better. Usually when you have a disease, when you take the cure, they can just kind of keep you under wraps or whatever you want to call it. But there's a compromise to the system. In regard to alcoholism, when we take the cure, in all areas of our life, in every way, it's better. And it continues to get better if it's being done right. If it's being done in a way that I would refer to as making it a priority as if your life depends on it, because it does. And it talks about, in the doctor's opinion, it talks about that we have an allergy for alcohol. An allergy is an abnormal reaction to some food, substance, or beverage. It's an allergy. With different substances, the allergy is different. But with alcoholism, the allergy is that once I start drinking, I can't safely predict how far it's going to go. Once I start drinking, I want to drink more. And it's funny because I remember going to a bar and just wanting to have a couple drinks so I could sort of loosen up so I could talk to women. And then in a pretty short period of time, I'd be too drunk to talk to women. Like, what just happened there? Like, also during that allergy thing, let's call it, there's something that happens that is an absolute guarantee that you have alcoholism. If you've done this, it guarantees that you have alcoholism, okay? Most people won't guarantee, but I will. And the guarantee that I'm talking about is that if you drank and then ran into the bathroom and threw up and then continued drinking, you're an alcoholic. All right. If you can name me one person that ate a lobster and then got sick from eating the lobster and then went back to eating more lobster, I'll show you a lobster addict. Okay, you know what I mean? Like, there's something more going on there than that. Alcohol just made me sick, and now I'm going to eat more. Like, there's, you know, in the early days, like the first time I ever drank Tanqueray. The first time I ever drank Tanqueray, I was in high school. We went to JFK Airport. We dropped off a friend of ours. We were drinking Tanqueray. And my friend had he got into an accident. He had a Mustang, and his front bumper was... He got into an accident, so he needed to get a new front bumper. We drove around JFK Airport looking for another Mustang, and we unscrewed the bumper from the other person's car, put it in our car, and drove away. This is the nice guy I was. You know what I mean? This is the amends I need to, you know, the silly amends that I need to deal with now. And during that period of time, we were drinking Tanqueray. I had too much, and I got sick, and I never drank Tanqueray again. But I continued drinking because we had, you know, Southern Comfort, and we had beer. I continued drinking, but, you know, it was the Tanqueray. You know what I mean? Like, that was the only time I ever drank Tanqueray. I'd never had it before or since. Now, that's a reasonable response to getting sick. Later in my life, I threw up and I was like, good, you know, I have more room in my stomach now to drink more, you know what I mean? That makes no sense whatsoever. If you ever drank alcohol that made you sick and then continued drinking alcohol, there's something more going on there. Right. Alcohol is doing something for you that it doesn't do for a non-alcoholic. So that's the first part of the physical, is that it sets off a craving when we want more alcohol. We can't safely predict how far it's going to go once it starts. And then the second part, which I would say is physical, is that alcohol does something for us. When I drink alcohol, I get this in control, get up and go into town, yeah, I want more kind of a feeling, right? And it's really strange because there were times that I went to drink with people that weren't the people that I normally drank with, like, you know, people from work maybe, that we used to go to places sometimes right after work, and there was sort of discount and a buffet, and, you know, it wasn't the people I normally drank with. And, you know, I would have two or three drinks, and they would have, you know, two drinks or whatever. And I'd be going up to get another drink, and I'd say, you know, do you want to get a drink? And they would, do you want to get another drink? And they would say the weirdest thing of all time. They would say, no, I'm feeling the first one. I don't want another drink. And, like, I look at them, and I'm just like, you don't, you're feeling the first one. First of all, I'm feeling the first one. I want more. I love what the first one does for me. I love what drink it does for me. That's why I'm going to get more. And, you know, I look at them strange because they're having a completely different experience than I'm having. And they look at me strange because I'm having a completely different experience they're having. They can't understand why I even started drinking in the first place because they've heard the stories. And, you know, they make it home for dinner on time. And I'm always looking for an excuse not to make it home on time for dinner because the bar is open and I still have money. It doesn't make sense to me. Why would I leave? So alcohol does something for me. When a non-alcoholic drinks alcohol, they get this out of control beginning of a tipsy, I don't want any more, I don't like this kind of a feeling. That is not the experience that I have. They have a take it or leave it experience with alcohol. I drink to deal with life relationship with alcohol. It does something for me. I walk into a bar spitting bullets, pissed at everybody. After a few drinks, I love you, man. I want to buy everybody a drink. All of a sudden, my whole world changes. I never realized this, but when I drank alcohol, when it was working for me, it was a spiritual experience. My whole outlook on life and other people completely changed. I went from spitting bullets to being just all right. And as far as I can tell, another way that I describe that part of it is that our real problem is the crazy monkey mind and the tortured soul inside of us that just tortures us to being uncomfortable when we're not drinking. And there's this whole committee of voices in my head that are saying all kinds of stuff about all kinds of people, and none of it is happy-go-lucky. All of it is really bad and really critical and really judgmental in sort of an evil and corroding way. And then when I drink, in my experience, what happens is that all the voices quiet down, and now there's just one voice. And that one voice is just saying, drink more. It's all the problems are gone. All the issues are subsided. All that inner turmoil that I'm experiencing that's not there when there's a period of time when I haven't drank, which, you know, is always briefer and briefer as time goes by. But then as soon as I drink, then it reduces the voices. It reduces, it quiets the craziness within me. And then I'm just all right. And then there's just one voice, and that's drink more. It's really working, drink more. Like, I needed to deal with life. If anybody said to me, you know, don't drink, or, you know, just have one, like, that makes absolutely no sense to me. That makes no sense to me whatsoever. I still to this day cannot stand seeing people that drink like a half a drink and then leave. As far as I'm concerned, that's alcohol abuse. I don't know how they do it. I never left a drink behind. You know what I mean? Like, it's funny, that's how I know that, you know, I don't have a water drinking problem because I have left water behind. You know what I mean? Like it's not doing for me what I can't do for myself. Alcohol definitely did. I always knew where my drink was. You know what I mean? Like, I was always that guy that, you know, like, tripped and fell and saved the beer. You know what I mean? Like, smashed my head, I'm bleeding now, but the beer was saved. You know what I mean? Like I couldn't buy another one, you know? So physically, it's we set up a craving where we can't predict how far it's going to go. And as far as I'm concerned, also part of the physical is that when I alcohol does something for me, it doesn't do for non-alcoholics. And when Sam told me that, I was like, man, that explains so much. I always wondered why. I went there just to have two, and then it turned into 2 weeks. And then mentally, it talks about the mental obsession, which is always kind of interesting. Well, the mental obsession is that our minds, I would assume that my mind knows the truth, but it just doesn't reveal it to me. My mind, when I haven't had a drink for a short period of time and I'm considering drinking, talking myself into drinking is probably a good way of describing it. Because, you know, in NA they have this, and I really relate to it, that, you know, it's, you know, we spend our whole life getting more alcohol, making sure that we have money to be able to get alcohol, and thinking about how we're going to get alcohol. Like, we spend whole areas of our life around those things. Getting more, making sure I have money to get more, and thinking about getting more. That, but, you know, I remember when I first got sober this last time, thinking, you know, how did I ever get anything done? You know what I mean? Like, I was obsessed with getting high and getting wasted. I was obsessed with what it takes to be wasted. Every moment of every day, that was in the forefront of my mind. But what the mental obsession does is that it's causing, if you guys want to open one of those windows a little bit, since I was the idiot that told you not to.
You didn't have
no. The one window, please. Close the door. One window. Thank you. We don't see the truth. I think the mind knows the truth, but it just doesn't point it out to us. And what happens is, we don't think about the problems that alcohol causes us. It just thinks about the relief that's going to come once we drink. That because of the spiritual malady, we have this inner uncomfortability and this complete disregard of what might be happy-go-lucky or happy. And what ends up happening is that the mind is completely focused on the relief that comes when we drink, because it works every time, and for every single one of us in this room who are alcoholics, it's going to work for us today just as well as it did when we were out there. That if I'm experiencing, now this isn't sober, let me point that out, let me say it again, this isn't sober if you're really, really uncomfortable in your own skin, if you're really, really lost, if you're really, really angry, if you're really, really just afraid of everything. This isn't sober. Doesn't matter if you're drinking or not. This isn't sober. That at some point, probably sooner than later, your mind will talk you into taking a drink, because drinking will help you with that. And that is what our problem is. The inner craziness, the inner uncomfortability, the inner squirrely mind and the gut that just is lost and sore. Otherwise known as our reality. When we are out there and even for periods of time when we're in here. You see, there's a big difference between not drinking and not drinking and being happy about it. There's a big difference. Just not drinking is not sober. Not drinking and being happy about it, that's sober. That's the goal. If you're currently, I mean, don't get me wrong, you know what I mean? Like, you know, your dog's going to die. You know what I mean? Like, your girlfriend's going to leave you. Either because you're breaking up or they die. Your parents are going to die. You're going to experience difficulties and craziness with your kid. You're going to lose your job. There's going to be perhaps a physical problem. You're going to get into a car accident. You're going to want to achieve something and it didn't happen. And we have to be all right with it, because that's called life. Yes, when our mother dies, there's going to be a period of time when we're going to be sad. But we have to find a way to deal with that, because that's called reality. It's going to happen. I'm telling you right now. I've been sober for 26 years. I could rattle off a whole lot of stuff that I've been through, man. Stuff that I've been through. And the goal of AA is to go through it and find a way for it to be as reasonable as possible. And maybe to be all right with it. You know, I sat at the deathbed of my mother at the moment of her death, and I was all right with it. If you had told me that that would happen, I would tell you you were insane. I'd never even heard of that before. Mm. And I was there at the moment of her death. It was the most beautiful, sacred moment I've ever experienced. I experienced 90% gratitude that that woman was even ever in my life, and 10% grief. And there were people that were in my life that thought I was in denial. And I wasn't in denial. Because of AA, I was absolutely 100% even with her. As in, we had no past issues to deal with. We had no past conditioning to work out. There were no other amends that needed to be made. We were in love with each other, and we were in each other's life. And we knew that I knew that she loved me, and she knew that I loved her. And what more can you do in anyone's life? I'm sorry if this is news to you. Everybody dies. Mm. It cannot be avoided. However, we have to find a way to be comfortable with no matter what. You lose your arm. You got to find a way to be all right with it. Your child doesn't want to talk to you anymore. You have to find a way to deal with that. One of the worst things that ever happened to me was last year I had to put my cat down. It still destroys me. But I have to find a way to deal with it. What's interesting is what I've learned is that, and this is really, really beautiful, what I've learned is that when your heart breaks, when you just let your heart break, it makes more room for you to love. Mm-hmm. Didn't see that one coming? Mm-hmm. Never heard too many people talking about that. When you allow yourself to just let your heart break, it opens you up more to love more. It's really beautiful. It's a great gift. So the mental obsession doesn't show you the truth, the problems that drinking causes. It just focuses on the relief that's going to come when I drink. And it's going to work for every single one of us just today as it did when it worked then. But you see, if I'm comfortable in my own skin, if I'm all right, then the mental obsession doesn't take hold because I'm not looking to escape from anything. I like how I feel. I don't need to escape. Thank you, but I actually prefer slobbering all over myself. I cry everywhere I go, so it's just a thing. It's just a thing. Thank you, though. Thank you. So I have this hole in my mind that it doesn't see the truth. All I think about is the relief that's going to come, and that relief is guaranteed. But you see, I have to replace the ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks with the ease and comfort that comes gradually over time by working and reworking the steps and growing spiritually. If I'm not getting high in recovery with being recovered and being all right with myself, then I'm just going to get high by going and drinking. I have to find some way to be comfortable in my own skin. And it's either going to be without alcohol or it's going to be with alcohol. Because as far as I'm concerned, miserable and sober is not a reasonable option. Now, up until this conversation I had with Sam, I didn't realize that there was another way. So Sam was the man that carried the message to me. And also, I saw him for that previous year absolutely change. So I knew that it was possible. And I knew that this was the guy to talk to about it because I saw his whole face change from being just angry to being just calm. So this was my poster child for how, you know, he's worse than me. So now the poster child for he has something that I want. And then the spiritual malady, which is the third piece. The spiritual malady probably all humans have. It's just that for alcoholics, we're fortunate enough to have alcohol to help us with it. But then the alcohol problems becomes an issue. So then we need to stop drinking, but we still haven't, when we stop drinking, we still haven't dealt with the problem at all. Because the problem is that inner craziness, that inner unmanageability, that inner discomfort. The 12 and 12 refers to it in, I think, the best way. It refers to it as self-centered fear. Sometimes I call it self-sabotage. We live with something within us that wants us either drunk at best or miserable at worst. So if you end up going back to drinking, you're lucky as far as I'm concerned. Because it'll help with that inner unmanageability. If you're not drinking and you're not seeking a spiritual solution, it's just going to get worse, and it's just going to get worse, and it's just going to get worse. And you're either going to take yourself out, or you're going to end up on the top of a tower shooting down at college students. Because that's what people in that condition do. That's what psychopaths do. And there's an element of our disease that is very psychopathic. And what I mean by that is just, you know, just the darkness within us. We have to find a way out, and that's exactly what the steps are about, and that's what exactly what spiritual growth is about. And it's the only thing that I've ever found that works. I can't say this for certain, but I always like sort of saying that, you know, I tried everything, and it didn't work, and then I tried AA. I tried all of AA, and then it worked, and I was like, wow, I never didn't expect that. And that was, you know, 22 years ago, and now 22 years later, I still can't stop talking about it because it's been so incredible for me. And I can guarantee that you'll have the same experience. The 12 step says, you know, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. It doesn't say sometimes it happens or it might happen. It says you will have this experience. But we have to be thorough. We have to be working it as if our life depends on it. That's to be a real priority. It's the most important thing you're ever going to do, and it's going to give you the greatest result you've ever gotten. But, you know, I don't have time to meditate today. I see somebody that needs help, but, you know, I'm kind of busy. Sorry. It's a lot easier just to be dishonest. It's a lot easier just to have issues with people. You know, resentments are kind of cool. It's really hard, ladies and gentlemen. It's really, really hard. But there is absolutely no greater result that can be possibly had, as far as I'm concerned. So that's the physical, mental, and spiritual problem. Physically, we can't predict how far it's going to go. We have an allergy. And also, it does something for us. It doesn't do for somebody else. And then the mental obsession that we just don't see the truth. It never tells us the problems that it's going to cause. It always tells us the relief that's going to come, which it absolutely does happen when we drink. And then the spiritual malady that we just don't play well with others. We just don't get along. We just can't seem to find the... We just can't be aright. We just can't be aright. We might even have it. You know, there's the Bible talks about, you know, the peace that passes all understanding. You know, we have the misery that passes all understanding because we're doing, like, really well, but we're unhappy. Like, what the hell's going on there? Like, I'm an idiot, you know what I mean? I just let my mind talk me into such stupidity. It doesn't have anything to do with anything. It was always that way. And I came from a wonderful family. I came from a wonderful, supportive, loving Brady Bunch family, and I still hated it. I ran screaming from them. I couldn't love myself, so how could I let somebody else love me? I couldn't do it. I hated it. And then I said to Sam, why is this news to me? No wonder why I need to work the steps. No wonder why I've needed to work the steps all along. My problem is a lot worse than I thought it was. A lot worse. My best thinking got me here over and over again. My best thinking, not my mediocre thinking, not my worst thinking, my best thinking brought me into AA three times and walked me right out of AA three times. My best thinking walked me out of here. If you can even just get a little bit behind what I just said, if you can even just realize just a little bit that your best thinking got you here, your best thinking, that's what you're up against, your best thinking. It's crazy. It's insane. It does not have your best interests in mind. If it didn't need you to walk around, it would have killed you a long time ago. And that's the disease. And that's the problem. That's what we're up against. It's an evil and corroding part of us. If you've ever done a four-step, you know exactly what you're up against, because there is a part of you that doesn't want you to do it. As soon as you start doing your four-step, all of a sudden, vacuuming is a good idea. You know what I mean? Like just anything but, you know, anything but this. There's a part of us that will talk us out of anything that is good for us. You know, there's this really famous expression that I love. Well, it's not really famous. It's famous because I say it a lot. And the saying goes like this, that what's the difference between a bad habit and a good habit? The difference is that a good habit is easy to break. And that's what we're up against. Bad habits are impossible to break. Bad habits, we have the momentum. As soon as a bad habit starts, its momentum flying down the road is there, keeping us moving in that direction. Good habits, you know what?
Right.
Don't have time to meditate today. I'm going to be loose with my lips today. I'm going to say whatever I want to say at work. It has nothing to do with reality. Nothing further from honesty could be coming out of my mouth. And then we have to live with that. You know what I mean? And then we start getting uncomfortable in our own skin. And then drinking is an option. Because alcohol, 100% guaranteed, will help you with that in a very short period of time. If you're in AA and you're like, haven't found it yet, let me put it that way, you haven't found it yet, something's wrong, something's off, you're not there yet, it just means you're not doing it right. It's as simple as that. There's all kinds of theories, there's all kinds of stuff that I hear sometimes in AA. You know, like even just the thing that, you know, think the drink through, keep your memory green. You know, if I'm at a meeting and that's shared and I have not shared yet, at some point before the meeting ends, I'm going to share, yeah, keep your memory green and think the drink through. And if you're not able to do that, you're an alcoholic and you're in the right place. If we could think the drink through, if we could keep our memory green, why would we need to go to AA? Mm. We're asking a newcomer to do something that an alcoholic cannot do. We cannot keep our memory green. We cannot think the drink through. 9 out of 10 times, 14 out of 15 times, but what's going to happen when that 15th time comes? And I'm at home, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, the liquor store is still open, there is nobody that I can call, and my mind is just chewing me up and spitting me out. Mm. And my mind is, you know what, if you drink, it'll help you with that. And it will, guaranteed. The relapse is always before we take the drink. The relapse is always way before we take the drink. And then, you know, the physical, mental, and spiritual solution, which, again, he outlined it to me, and I'm like, why is this news to me? I've been here for 3.5 years. And, you know, the circle and triangle, the bottom part of the triangle says program, which is the working and the reworking of the 12 steps. The left side of the triangle says fellowship, which is meetings and interacting with AAs outside of meetings. And then the right side of the triangle is service, which is giving of yourself, expecting nothing in return. And it's a equilateral triangle, so all three sides are the same size. And ask yourself today, where are you in all three parts of the solution? Mm-hmm. You know, in the last month, how many meetings have you gone to? In the last month, how have you used the steps to help you deal with life? Have you made all of your amends that you're consciously aware of? Do you pray and meditate every day? Do you do evening reviews every day? Do you start the day asking God to help you and to help you when you face a decision and when agitated and doubtful, that to try to get back on the beam again. The most read piece of AA literature is how it works, because you see, hear it at meetings all the time. It's the most read piece of AA literature. Okay? In the first paragraph of the most read piece of AA literature, it mentions honesty three times and even refers to it as rigorous honesty. Is that a big part of your life? I'm not going to make eye contact. Is that a big part of your life? Is it a priority to you? Even if it makes you look bad, even if you might not get the promotion because you made a mistake, that's rigorous honesty. Is honesty no matter what? Is that a priority? If it's not, I don't know if you'll get sober. I can guarantee that you're not going to be happy and sober, because you got to live with yourself. You know what's going on. And you know what's going on every time you see that person you lied to. And you get that shot. You get that shot of adrenaline. You know what I mean? You kind of got to walk on the other side of the street now. You know what I mean? Now there's whole areas of your life that you got to walk on the other side of the street. You can't get together with your family anymore for Thanksgiving because things have been said and things have been done. And you're sober, right? You haven't been drinking. You're living your life in this crazy, self-consumed way, which is the problem. So in the last 30 days, ask yourself, how many meetings have you gone to? Where are you in the steps? Have you been thorough with what you've done in the steps? Or are you using the steps to deal with every area of your life every day? Are you being of service to others? And not just when it's convenient, which, you know, the mind will talk you right out of that real quickly. You know, it's just not convenient. It's never convenient. Like I said, nobody ever said it was easy. But there's only one thing more difficult than working all 12 steps, and that's not working all 12 steps. It talks about half measures avail us nothing. So, you know, if half measures avail us nothing, at what point does it start having an effect? You know, is it 90%? 90% gives us, you know, 50% results, and does 75% give us any kind of a result? If 50% gives us no result, does 75% start to give you a little bit of a result, or is it still not giving you any result? Is it 100% is the only result you're ever going to have? I don't know where that number is. I don't know where that tipping point is. I have absolutely no idea. So as far as I'm concerned, what I try to talk about and what I try to do is just, as far as I've seen, the most ideal way of going about it, which is work the steps immediately and quickly, and then try to make it into a way of life. And use a four-column inventory whenever resentment comes up in the future, and whenever fear comes up in the future. And talk to people about what's really going on in an honest way, in a risky way, in a way that there is 99% of you that doesn't want to do it, and you do it anyway. Some of the proudest moments I've ever had in AA was when somebody raised their hand and said, "You know what? I feel like drinking." I can guarantee you that 90% of them did not want to say anything. But the cool thing is, and this should not be missed, somebody at a meeting raises their hand and for the first time shares what's really going on inside of them. "You know what? I want to drink." And you know what's the beautiful thing that just happened there? Yeah. There's a part of them that wants to drink, but there's a part of them that doesn't want to drink, and that's why they brought it up. And that's the part that they just tapped into, and that's what's supposed to be encouraged, and that's what needs to be pointed out, because there is a party that doesn't want to drink, because if there wasn't a party that doesn't want to drink, you're not going to share about it. And that needs to be pointed out to the person. It's something I do usually after the meeting, is say, "You know, listen, you know, that was really beautiful what you did, and don't dismiss what just happened there. Yeah, you want to drink, but there's another part of you that doesn't want to drink, and that's why you shared it, and that's the part you need to look at, and that's the part you need to hold on to, and that's the part you need to follow, because that's the spiritual part of you." And then there was a bunch of stuff I was going to do, but let me just close with this I want to show you where in the doctor's opinion it talks about the three-part problem and the three parts, where the three-part problem. And that is on the bottom of XXVIII. Good luck with that. 28 Roman numerals. It talks about the very bottom of that page. It talks about the spiritual malady. It talks about they are restless, irritable, and discontented. So that's the spiritual malady. That's what it looks like when we're not doing okay. That's a really good unmanageability exercise to work with. You know, how much of my day is spent being restless, irritable, and discontented? Restless means uncomfortable. I love the word irritable, but when I first heard the definition, I really hated it. Irritable means easily annoyed. How much of the day today did you spend irritable? And then discontented, which is never satisfied. That's the spiritual malady. That's a really extreme definition of what it looks like and what it feels like when you're spiritually off. Restless, irritable, and discontented. You know, my middle name for the first 30 years of my life was restless, irritable, and discontented. I was a walking, easily annoyed, you know, whatever. And then it says, unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. So again, we get this ease and comfort when we drink. It helps us with that craziness. It helps us with that uncomfortability. Drinks which we see others taking with impunity. We see other people drink and they don't have problems. I drink and I have problems. Why do I do that? And then after I have succumbed or given in to the desire again because of the mental obsession and the phenomenon of craving develops, as soon as I put alcohol into my body, I get the craving where I can't predict how far it's going to go. They pass through the well-known stages of a spree emerging remorseful, which is more of the spiritual malady, with a firm resolution not to drink again. And then I drink again anyway. It's repeated over and over and over and over again, unless I can experience an entire psychic change or a spiritual awakening. And then it says, on the other hand, as strange as this may seem to those who do not understand, once a psychic change or a spiritual awakening has occurred, the very same person who seemed doomed, who had so many problems that he despaired of ever solving them, suddenly finds himself easily able to control his desire for alcohol, the only effort necessary being that required to follow a few simple rules, not suggestions, otherwise known as the 12 steps. We work the 12 steps to deal with the past, and then we play with the 12 steps to deal with the present. And when we're okay in the present, that creates the future that we would always want. And it may not turn out the way we want it to, because we're not in control of life. God is. So people are still going to die. People's jobs are going to be stripped away from you. And you're going to be right with it, because whatever comes to you as the result of stuff that you wanted stripped away from you, and then stuff comes into your life that you didn't necessarily want, but when you accepted it as a gift from God, you realize this is so much better than I would have ever wanted, even if I had known to want it. And you start to live a life where you're so focused on just accepting whatever it is that you get that you no longer focus on you getting what you want. It's not even a priority for you anymore. Just however life is, if I'm all right with it, I forget about wanting it to be different. And that's the essence of spiritual awakening, as far as I'm concerned, is that no matter what, I'm just all right with it. You know, there's this really great quote, and I'll end with this, that what a spiritual awakening is no more argument with life, no more argument with you, no more argument with myself, and no more argument with God. That's called being spiritually awake. There is no more comfortable place that you could be than no argument with anything. Imagine how much of your life you spent arguing with reality. And when you argue with reality, you lose but 100% of the time. And if you can be right with reality, no matter how it is, giving birth to a retarded kid, losing a job, not getting a job that I want, just being right with it, making the most of whatever it is that's happening right here, right now. If I can just be right with everything that's happening right here, right now, whether they close the windows or not. Come on, that was kind of funny, right? Just being right with however it is. Be in a ride with however my kid shows up. Be in a ride with however my girlfriend shows up. Be in a ride with however the job shows up that day. Just be in a ride with it. Mm-hmm. It's called stepping out easy, and it's what the essence of conscious contact. But that means that you're not always going to get your way. And that's when the mind starts arguing with it, right? Because wait a minute, I'm going to make me happy. I can't trust God. He doesn't know what he's doing. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.